midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
By the time she was 14, Carolyn had already learned that houses were temporary things. She and her mother moved often enough that unpacking never felt permanent. Boxes stayed folded instead of broken down. Furniture was arranged for convenience, not comfort. Each place was treated like a pause rather than a destination, something to endure until circumstances changed again. The house where everything began looked ordinary enough. It sat quietly on a residential street, narrow and tall, its exterior unremarkable in a way that made it easy to overlook. Nothing about it suggested danger or history. Nothing hinted at what waited inside. The layout, though, was strange. The front door opened into a small foyer. From there, the dining room stretched forward, connected to the kitchen beyond it, but the staircase cut through the center of the house, blocking the view. Standing on the stairs, Caroline couldn't see the kitchen at all. It sat hidden behind the structure, tucked just out of sight unless you came all the way down and turned around. She noticed that detail early on. Something about it bothered her, though she couldn't explain why. Caroline spent most afternoons alone. Her mother worked long hours, and by the time Caroline came home from school, the house was empty and quiet. The silence wasn't comforting. It felt heavy, as if the walls absorbed sound instead of reflecting it. The first thing that unsettled her wasn't dramatic. It was music. She heard it while sitting in her upstairs bedroom, sketching or flipping through books. It was faint and instrumental, drifting upward from the first floor. She couldn't identify the melody, but it was soft and strangely beautiful, like something played deliberately low. Every time she left her room to investigate, the sound stopped, not faded, not changed. Stopped. She checked the obvious explanations, radios, televisions, even the neighbors' houses, but found nothing. Eventually, she convinced herself it was nothing more than the house settling or her imagination filling in the silence. She didn't mention it to her mother. It didn't feel important enough to justify concern. That changed one afternoon when she forgot she was alone. Caroline stepped into the hallway and leaned over the stair railing, calling out her mother's name out of habit. Her voice echoed downward, and then a voice answered, "Hello." It came from the kitchen. The sound was loud, cheerful, and unmistakably close. Caroline froze. Her mother had left hours earlier. Caroline was certain of that. The doors were locked just as they always were. There was no explanation for the voice, especially not one that sounded like a child, young, high, and energetic. She didn't wait to hear anything else. She ran back to her bedroom, shut the door, and locked it. Her heart pounded as she sat on the bed, listening for footsteps or laughter, anything that would prove she hadn't imagined it. The house remained silent. From that day on, being alone in the house felt different. The silence no longer felt empty. It felt occupied, quiet, but attentive. Soon after, the noises began. Caroline would be upstairs when she heard movement in the kitchen below, cardboard scraping against cardboard. Something being lifted and shaken gently, then set back down. She recognized the sound immediately. Cereal boxes. The hollow rattle of flakes inside thin cardboard. The noises happened often enough that she stopped trying to investigate. Instead, she learned to freeze in place when she heard them, waiting until the sound stopped before retreating quietly back to her room. At night, the house felt closer. She slept with her bedroom door open because her mother slept with hers open across the hall. The sightline made Caroline feel less alone. Some nights, she would open her eyes and see movement in the hallway. Short, dark shapes peeking briefly around the doorframe before slipping out of sight. They were human in outline, but wrong in proportion. Too small, too compressed. When she called out, her mother told her to go back to sleep. Once, when Caroline insisted she was seeing something, her mother placed a rosary around her neck with more impatience than reassurance and told her she was overtired. Caroline lay awake afterward, staring at the ceiling, wondering how something could feel so present and still leave no trace. The first physical sensation came without warning. Caroline was lying on her back with her eyes closed when she felt weight shift on the bed. Then something rolled slowly up her leg. Heavy, deliberate, unmistakable. When she reacted, throwing off the blankets and sitting up, there was nothing there. After that, sleep became a struggle. She woke night after night, convinced something was lying across her legs, pinning her in place. She could feel resistance when she tried to move, even though she knew there was nothing visible there. The fear dulled into exhaustion, leaving her tense even during the day. The strangest moment came in broad daylight. Caroline was standing in the kitchen when she glanced up at the microwave resting in its cubby above the counter. For a split second, she saw a man's face looking down at her. Not reflected, not distorted, but present. He was unfamiliar, calm, gentle. When she looked away and then back, he was gone. What unsettled her most wasn't that she had seen him. It was that she hadn't been afraid. Caroline didn't tell anyone about the Manning in the kitchen, not because she thought she'd imagined him, but because she didn't know how to explain the absence of fear. Every strange thing that had happened until then had come with a sharp edge, panic, confusion, the urge to run. That moment hadn't. It lingered in her thoughts as something unresolved rather than threatening, and that somehow made it harder to talk about. Life moved on the way it always did. School, homework, long evenings waiting for her mother to come home. The house never grew louder or more violent. It didn't escalate in the way horror stories promised. Instead, it settled into patterns. Music returned now and then, always faint, always impossible to locate. Objects shifted just enough to be noticed. Sounds happened behind walls or below floors, never close enough to confront directly. Caroline learned how to live alongside it without understanding it. Then they moved again. The next place was different in every obvious way. A newly built condo in a quiet suburban development, clean lines and pale walls, the kind of place that smelled like fresh paint and carpet glue. Caroline wanted to believe that whatever had lingered in the old house belonged there and wouldn't follow them. She brought only one thing with her that mattered. Her grandfather's bomber jacket had belonged to him since the war. Heavy, worn, and faintly scented with something earthy and old, it had always felt comforting to her. She folded it carefully into a suitcase and placed it on the shelf in her new closet, the way she always had. It felt important that it came with her, though she couldn't have explained why. The unease started almost immediately. Her bedroom in the condo felt cold, no matter the temperature. Not physically cold, something deeper than that. The air seemed unwelcoming, resistant, as if the room didn't want to be occupied. Caroline slept there anyway, telling herself she was being dramatic. She kept a small lamp plugged in across the room. Some nights, she lay awake, watching it change brightness on its own, dim, then full, then dim again. The rhythm wasn't steady. It didn't flicker like faulty wiring. It pulsed slowly and deliberately. When it became too much, she crept down the hall and slept beside her mother. One night, shortly after Caroline climbed into bed, the tall floor lamp in her mother's room switched on. They both noticed it at the same time. Caroline whispered that the light had turned on by itself. Her mother grumbled about a broken switch and told her to turn it off. Caroline hesitated, heart racing, before forcing herself out of bed. She crossed the room, glanced around, turned the lamp off, and rushed back under the covers. She was still shaking when she opened her eyes. Hovering above her was the outline of a human head and shoulders, completely black, suspended in the air and angled toward her face. It didn't move. It didn't reach for her. It simply watched. Caroline pulled the covers over her head and stayed there until exhaustion overcame fear. When she finally looked again, it was gone. Her mother slept peacefully beside her, unaware anything had happened. The next day, the boy who lived with them pulled Caroline aside. He told her he'd woken up during the night and seen translucent figures, white, shapeless people, walking through Caroline's closed bedroom door and into her room over and over again. He hadn't known how to describe it, only that it lasted long enough to scare him before he fell back asleep. Caroline didn't tell him what she'd seen. She didn't need to. The activity never became violent. It didn't follow a clear pattern. It simply existed, woven into the fabric of their nights until it became impossible to separate from normal life. Eventually, they moved again. The disturbances faded but never disappeared entirely. In the house Caroline lived in during high school, the events were smaller, quieter. She would wake from naps to hear deliberate tapping on her bedroom door, only to find herself alone. Once, as she turned out the light to sleep, a woman's voice spoke her name from within the room, clear, distinct, and close. That time, Caroline wasn't afraid, and she was angry. She snapped back into the empty space, demanding to know what it wanted, frustration overriding fear. The room stayed silent. Still, she slept with the television on for weeks afterward, the noise acting as a barrier she didn't fully understand. Years later, long after she'd stopped trying to make sense of any of it, a message arrived from someone she didn't know. The new tenants of one of the old houses had found her online. They wanted to ask if she'd experienced anything strange while living there. Caroline stared at the message for a long time before responding. She already knew the answer. Caroline didn't respond to the message right away. She read it once, then again, feeling the familiar tightening in her chest that always accompanied reminders of those years. The new tenants were polite, careful. They didn't say the word haunted, but it hovered just beneath their sentences. They asked about sounds, lights, voices, the feeling of being watched when no one was there. She closed the app and set her phone down. By then, Caroline was an adult. She had a job, a routine, a life that stayed put. She slept through the night more often than not. Whatever sensitivity she'd carried as a teenager had dulled with time, or perhaps learned how to stay quiet. The world had solidified around her in ways it never had when she was younger. And yet, reading that message felt like pressing on a bruise that never fully healed. She eventually replied with something vague. She said she'd experienced odd things, that the house never felt empty, that it seemed sensitive to who lived there. She didn't offer details. She didn't need to. The response came back almost immediately, gratitude mixed with relief, confirmation more than anything else. It wasn't just them. That knowledge stayed with her longer than she expected. In the weeks that followed, Caroline found herself thinking less about specific incidents and more about the pattern of it all. Nothing she'd experienced had followed her relentlessly. There had been no single presence, no obvious threat, no dramatic confrontation that ended everything in a clean, satisfying way. Instead, there had been places, spaces that seemed to hold on to impressions the way fabric holds scent, houses that reacted rather than attacked, rooms that felt crowded even when empty, activity that ebbed and flowed depending on who was there and how long they stayed. Looking back, she realized something else, too. The disturbances had been strongest during periods of instability, moves, emotional upheaval, times when she and her mother were barely holding things together. When life settled, the activity softened. It never vanished completely, but it lost its urgency. She wondered if the houses had sensed that uncertainty the way animals do, or maybe it had been the other way around. The thought returned to her grandfather's bomber jacket more than once. Somewhere between moves, it had disappeared, lost in a closet donated by mistake or left behind in a box no one remembered packing. She'd searched for it once years earlier, but gave up after turning every obvious place upside down. At the time, she'd been upset. The jacket had been one of the few constants in a childhood defined by change. Losing it felt symbolic in a way she didn't have words for then. Now she wondered if its disappearance had been necessary, not because it carried anything dark or dangerous, but because it anchored something to her that no longer needed to follow. She didn't believe her grandfather had been responsible for what she'd experienced. The man in the kitchen hadn't been him. She was certain of that. Still, objects absorbed meaning. They gathered memory. They blurred lines between past and present. Maybe letting it go had helped her move on more than she realized. Caroline never sought answers through investigations or spiritual explanations. She didn't cleanse houses or research property records. She didn't want to turn her experiences into a belief system that demanded constant vigilance. She preferred to think of them as moments when the world had briefly overlapped with something adjacent, something that didn't belong to her, and that she didn't belong to either. Occasionally, small things still happened, a knock at the door when no one was there. her name spoken softly just before sleep, the sense that a room remembered her, even when she hadn't been there long. But those moments passed quickly now, like ripples instead of waves. She didn't feel targeted, she felt noticed. That distinction mattered. When friends asked whether she believed in ghosts, Caroline usually shrugged. She said she believed in memory, in energy, in the way places responded to people who paid attention. She didn't dismiss anyone else's experiences, but she didn't dramatize her own. The truth was simpler than that. Some houses had felt heavier than others. Some spaces had been more crowded than they looked. And during a time in her life when everything was uncertain, when she was young, unprotected, and constantly uprooted, those places had spoken more loudly. Now, they didn't need to. The message from the tenants stayed in her inbox unanswered after that initial exchange. She didn't feel obligated to warn them or explain further. Everyone encountered these things in their own way, at their own pace. Some learned to live alongside them, some learned to ignore them, others left. All of those responses were valid. Caroline turned off her phone and went to bed that night without the television on. The room was quiet. The darkness felt neutral, not expectant. She closed her eyes and slept. And for the first time in a long while, she didn't feel like the house was listening.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.